Chapter 2, The State of Humankind. Opening questions. Can how well human beings are doing be objectively assessed? Why do people do so many bad things? What is Christianity's role in the state of mankind or humankind, if any? If we ignore certain things we don't like to see or admit, does that mean they don't exist? Christians like to say that Christianity has been a very good and positive influence on mankind over the centuries. They point to the successes of Christianity to validate that belief. And of course, success would generally be defined as the number of members or adherents that participate, the amount of money and land and other material resources they possess and control, or the amount of money they spend on their charitable services. Other religions do the same. Evolutionary atheists and agnostics try to make a case that either the mysterious physical force of evolution is bettering mankind, as the millennia tick by, or that their humanistic beliefs and actions are helping mankind, or both. If anything, this book is dealing with root issues and problems and not painting a pretty picture over the pain, heartache, and suffering that exists in reality. This book endeavors to provide a solution to the root problems that plague mankind. Just like a physician cannot help a patient heal without properly diagnosing the problem, so we in this book cannot properly find a solution without looking closely at the patient, who is us, humankind. To deny realities is to be both deluded and, furthermore, not able to provide help. In order to be able to see if Christianity has been either a success or failure, and to be able to see what solution will work for the world's problems, we must first have an accurate view of the state of the world. This is reasonable because Christianity is very much part of the world, and its work is carried out in this world. So, for those people who have brought into the positive thinking philosophy, no matter your ilk, religious person or non-religious person, let's leave the biased filter and instead take a real, unvarnished, and unfiltered look at the patient, so to speak, to get a handle on the state of things. Later we will address why we as human beings have a strong bias against seeing clearly. The U.S., perhaps the most successful nation in history on the basis of being a stable nation state, based on people creating and agreeing to laws to govern people's behavior, where the people have selected their leaders, relatively politically free, and have been able to pursue what they consider important in life, individual freedom and happiness, is in the process of destroying itself. The amount of conflict in the U.S. today is rapidly heading to the level of other conflict episodes in the nation's history, like the Civil War. The people no longer agree on basic existential views of human life, absolutism versus relativism. We will look at those beliefs later in the book. Nor do they agree on an ethical standard for determining good or bad human behavior, traditionally derived from some religious standard. Like their religious brethren, who cannot agree on what the Bible says, the political folks cannot even agree on what the U.S. Constitution says, a valid political standard if people could agree on what it says and means. These choices of the American people have led them to the place where they no longer know how to tell if something is true or false, right or wrong. In fact, most Americans now take political freedom for granted and are not grateful for much of anything since greed and selfishness have grown exponentially in the hearts of the people. This book will not analyze the destruction of the American society, but it is noteworthy and provides the point that politics, economics, business, religion, or psychological philosophies are not what make a people strong, functional, and united. All of those domains are functioning well according to the normal world standards in the U.S., politics, economics, business, religion, or psychological philosophies. And yet, the people of the U.S. are starting to rip each other apart. If you have eyes to see, you will see that conflict rages in every corner of the globe, from large national conflicts involving warring violence and tens of thousands killed and millions driven from their homes and becoming refugees, to tens of thousands of people committing suicide each year in the U.S. alone. Then there is the commonplace daily conflict like children hating or running away from parents, or the silent animosity or backstabbing that characterizes so many workplaces as people compete for power or more money. These are but a very few examples of the root problems this book will address and provide a non-religious solution to. While many seek to deny the conflict, pain, and suffering that occurs each day by hiding from it and ignoring it in their perceived place of safety, it does not change the facts. Just because a person lives in a relatively safe and free from crime housing development in the United States or Europe, and they control what they choose to put in front of their face with their electronic devices, does not change the fact that billions of people are in conflict at some level, and billions are suffering or struggling in many different ways. The facts also rebuke the idea that human beings are evolving into something better. The conflict problems don't go away as time moves forward, or as the Earth's population grows, or as we get more clever with our technology of manipulating matter and energy. History proves that we are, in general, naturally predisposed to conflict and violence and the resultant pain, suffering, and destruction. There are ebbs and flows over history for sure, but the basic fact of human predisposition to conflict remains undeniable. In 2017, here's a small sampling of facts that illustrate well the state of humankind. Please think about what might be the root level causes for the following facts. Problem 1. Few with most, many with little. Nearly one half of the world's population, more than 3 billion people, live on less than $2.50 a day. More than 1.3 billion live in extreme poverty, less than $1.25 a day. 1 billion children worldwide are living in poverty. According to UNICEF, about 22,000 children die each day due to poverty. Thousands of children are dying from preventable disease and starvation, while the number of billionaires has risen to over 1,800, and the number of millionaires has risen to about 16 million. What does that mean from a wealth resource distribution standpoint? Half the world's wealth belongs to the top 1% of the wealthiest people. The top 10% of adults hold 85% of the world's wealth, while the bottom 90% hold the remaining 15% of the world's total wealth. The top 30% of adults hold 97% of the total wealth. According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, in 2012, the top 0.6% of the world's population, consisting of adults with more than $1 million U.S. dollars in assets, or the 42 million richest people in the world, held almost 40% of the world's wealth. The next 4.5%, that is 311 million people, held 32% of the world's wealth. The bottom 95% of the people held only 28% of the world's wealth. The source is Wikipedia. So let's get the simple facts straight. Tens of thousands of children are outright dying each day, and millions more are suffering, neglected, and abused, and billions of people are scraping by to survive each day, while a few hundred million people who could easily help them don't, and instead ignore them, justify their lack of help, and work to become wealthier. Clear enough? Even if you weed out the people who are self-destructive or unwilling to perform ethical work to better their lives in this world, the facts don't significantly change. The simple truth is that there is more than enough resources on this planet for all human beings, and with our improved technology, it would be a relatively simple matter to fairly distribute those resources. Problem 2. Priority of resource usage, war machines. The world's people nations spend trillions of dollars on war machines, and they do this based on the primary corruptors of human nature, as we will see, which are pride, fear, and selfishness. There are no murderous outer space aliens invading the planet to justify such behavior. Only pride, the pride that says, we are better than you and more worthy than you, and thus can take from you what we want. Fear says, you are different than us, so we don't trust you, and you might try and hurt us, so we must defend ourselves. Selfishness says, we want something, perhaps what you have, and we don't care about the impact to you of taking what we want, or we are going to take it, no matter what it does to you. More self-pride, which says, try to stop us and we will destroy you. That, dear listener, is the darkness of humanity. To deny it is irrational. These motivations and associated behaviors account for the vast majority of conflict in human history, and it is these aspects of human nature that justify spending a significant amount of the Earth's resources on weapons. Can the reader think of any better use of the world's resources than making machines intended to kill human beings? What is it about humankind that they are so driven to make war machines and use them on other people? Problem 3. Mankind's worst enemy. No, it is not disease or natural disasters. Rather, it is ourselves. The people who decide they are going to spend a large part or even the majority of our resources on war machines and weapons certainly want to use them and seem to look for opportunities to take and destroy. More people in human history have died at the hands of other human beings than any other means of physical death other than natural means of illness, disease, or body function failure. Add to that neglect as a cause, meaning I could have saved a person but did not, and you paint an accurate picture of the human race. Many hundreds of millions of people killed or allowed to die when they do not have to by other people. Warring conflicts flare up all over the earth, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, and Eastern Europe, to name a few in the last few years. Millions of refugees are fleeing the uncontrolled self-pride generated hatred of one people group and their beliefs against another and the resultant destruction. Huge amounts of pain, suffering, and loss for what? A new, better political leader who will allow the power he or she will receive to corrupt them and start the violent cycle all over again? Another religious leader who will keep the people in darkness and start the cycle of fear and hatred all over again? No doubt religion has contributed a significant portion to the conflict in world history. Stated another way, people's God claims and beliefs have been consistently used throughout history as justification to harm or destroy other people. A note for the atheist to not commit a logical fallacy here by believing this acknowledgement proves that God is not real or that Joshua of Nazareth is to blame. Joshua of Nazareth taught and lived out, love your enemies. So no, the violence in his name cannot be reasonably blamed on him. Other non-theists or agnostics try and blame all conflict on religion, and this too is wrong. Plain old greed, the desire for more or better material things, including land, the desire to take slaves to serve us, and the desire to exercise power over others with non-God motivations or using God claims as an excuse, equally have their place in history and the current state of affairs as the motivation for the conflict that exists. Problem 4. People killing themselves or suicide. In the United States, a nation that people worldwide describe as one of the most desirable places to live, people killing themselves has become the leading cause of injury-related death, overtaking auto accidents. That means about 50,000 U.S. citizens are killing themselves each year, or about 137 people each day. The number of suicides has been steadily increasing over the years. The following horrible and revealing facts were published by the Reuters news agency on November 3, 2016. Quote, the suicide rate among U.S. middle school students doubled from 2007 to 2014, surpassing for the first time the incidence of youngsters aged 10 to 14 who have died in car crashes, a federal report released on Thursday said. So, not only adults are killing themselves by the tens of thousands, but now children are also killing themselves by the hundreds each year. What a horrific manifestation of the state of things in the Christian nation that is the U.S. Add to the number of suicides those people who die from more or less purposeful drug abuse and overdose, and you have about 100,000 people essentially killing themselves because they do not want to exist in this world anymore. What evolutionary hypothesis fits with suicide caused by hopelessness? What political solution is going to fix those problems? How is money going to fix that? How are the latest psychological philosophies going to fix that? Is there some drug around the corner which will take away the hopelessness that drives much of the drug abuse problem? The answer is clearly no, since chemicals don't cause hopelessness, as hopelessness is a spiritual condition, not a physical one. And just as obvious is that while religion flourishes in the U.S., these problems wax, not wane, thus proving that religion is not an effective solution for these problems. In addition, many Christians are part of the statistics of suicide and drug usage. Problem 5. Drug usage to dull the hopelessness. Using drugs to dull or numb the inner spiritual hopelessness and pain people are experiencing in the U.S. alone rises every year and at this point is in the tens of millions of people. Whether they be illegal narcotics or opioids dispensed by one's physician, the intent is the same and the result is often the same. How many human beings worldwide are using drugs to dull their hopelessness? Billions? Those who are addicted to some drug in the U.S. number about 20 million. Those who misuse alcohol in the U.S. are about 15 million. Get the picture? Problem 6. Allowing others to be murdered and tortured when people have the ability to stop it. The people of the nations allowing openly murderous individuals and their followers to roam around the earth and rape, pillage, and murder freely. Groups like Boko Haram are paid essentially lip service while the United Nations sits around doing nothing but arguing, bashing Israel, and enjoying their New York lifestyle. With all the trillions of dollars spent on military junk, the only excuse the people of the world have for not preventing the murderous perpetrators perpetrated by groups like Boko Haram is the darkness of lovelessness and selfishness. The world's leaders' position on Islamic terror is nothing short of atrocious. It is politically incorrect to critique a world religion, so the leaders of democratic nations blunder around with words to avoid the simple truth that the religion of Islam itself contains teachings from their primary prophet Muhammad that include sayings like, quote, kill the infidels or non-Muslims, unquote. We shall address this in more detail later. Problem 7, human slavery or trafficking. According to the International Labor Organization, or ILO, forced labor alone, one component of human trafficking, generates an estimated $150 billion in profits per year as of 2014. In 2012, the ILO estimated that 21 million victims are trapped in modern-day slavery. Of these, 14.2 million, or 68%, were exploited for labor, 4.5 million, or 22%, were sexually exploited, and 2.2 million, or 10%, were exploited in state-imposed forced labor. Human sex trafficking, enslaving and abusing millions of women and children for men's sexual pleasure each day, while the people of the earth who could do something about it turn away and pretend it is not a problem, or engage in it, or facilitate it. Problem 8. Only helping others with basic or critical needs for money. It is one thing to not provide a non-essential product or service to someone who cannot pay for it. It is another thing altogether, for example, to not provide a necessary medical procedure, for example, life-saving or pain-reducing, because the person needing the help cannot pay for it or cannot afford it. How would you describe only being willing to help each other with bodily illness or injury needs if we receive money for doing so? If you are injured or have a disease that you cannot treat yourself, how would you like it if the only way someone would help you is if you paid the money, but you didn't have the money? This essentially describes the medical profession and industry in the U.S. The people operating the medical or healthcare industry are able and equipped with the means to help others who are injured or ill, but will only do so if they get money. Here's a simple illustration to demonstrate this evil. Let us say you're walking alone on a trail somewhere and you fall and break your ankle and cannot walk. While you are laying there in pain and concerned about the coming cold night, a person with the ability to help you comes along and asks, and you ask for help, and he says, well, I'll help you if you give me $100. You don't have the money, so he walks away and leaves you there or says, oh, I will see if I can find someone who will help you for nothing. The simple truth is that the people who make up the medical or health systems of the U.S. operate on that same principle, all their objections notwithstanding. Of course, they hide behind receptionists and insurance companies, and in some places they are forced to, by law, to treat people. But that does not change the fact that they have the means to help the sick and injured, but will only do so if they receive material benefit for doing so. This is evil. I do not propose that they not receive a wage for their work is valuable, but so is the electrician's work, which provided electricity to the building, or the plumber who provided working toilets, or the cafeteria staff who provided food, or the cleaning service who cleaned the bathrooms, etc. What I am saying is to deny competent medical help to a person based on money is morally wrong. It is also morally wrong to provide better medical care to those who can pay more. Solutions include tax-based compensation for healthcare providers with appropriate incentives, peer and patient reviews. A simple and practical solution would be to pass a law that says when a physician's rate exceeds, say, $100 per hour, the physician must collect his fee in person from the patient. The law would be even better if it required the physician to say something like, quote, please give me the X amount of money you owe me for my $150 per hour rate. One thing is certain. When you have many people who cannot afford good medical services, and at the same time you have physicians occupying most of the top 10 highest paying jobs in the nation, love and compassion are all but gone, and the marketing slogans about care are meaningless. Fact 9. Disrespecting and devaluing older or elderly people. Most people in the United States regularly show contempt and hatred for those who raised them and provided for them for the first 15 to 20 years of their life, their parents. Parents are ignored, disrespected, and dishonored by their children and finally put away in a nursing home to die essentially alone, cared for, quote-unquote, by paid people who don't care. This is evil, even when the parents, who have forgotten or never knew what love is, say they want to be put in a home. Only parents who believe they have nothing to contribute, no wisdom gained over this life, not even any love to give, would ask to be away from their children. Only parents who don't love their children would want to be away from their children. Only children who don't believe their parents are worthy of appreciation for all they did for them, who don't believe their parents are worthy of respect or honoring, who want to live selfish lives, who don't love their parents, would send their parents away to be, quote, cared for by people who would not be there if they were not paid money to be there. Stated another way, only people who have believed or contributed to the lie that older people are worthless and younger people are valuable would participate in the evil of isolation from people they claim to love. Or predicted by Joshua of Nazareth some 2,000 years ago, quote, the love of most has grown cold, unquote. A significant number of suicides happen in these loveless healthcare facilities. Is it any wonder why? Problem 10, fashionable lying. Lying for selfish material gain is evil. The sales and marketing people of the earth have made lying into an art form. The standard in the U.S. is falling so low that it is expected that a person selling something will lie to you, deceive you, or withhold important information about something associated with the sale. It should concern people that the real standard of honesty to which we will be held accountable is this: if I don't keep my word and don't apologize for breaking it, I have lied. If I make a practice of breaking my word and apologizing for it, but don't change, I am a self-deceived liar. If I practice lying for selfish gain, I am evil. If I withhold information in order to selfishly gain from someone, I am ruled by greed. Problem 11, the general state of human affairs. There are trillions of acts of unkindness that occur each day on the planet, all due to the three things that rule humans instead of love. From the coldness of not helping someone with some simple task, to ignoring people who would benefit from a kind word, to outright hurting each other in millions of ways each day. Yes, there are acts of kindness as well, but sadly, they are but a ripple under the tidal wave. New chapter section, State of Things Conclusions. What is the conclusion that is arrived at by the above truths about the state of humankind? From one important perspective, no other reasonable conclusion can be arrived at other than guilty. Someone once said, facts are stubborn things. Oh, you can whitewash all the above problems and ignore them and pretend they don't exist in order to live in a delusional state of selfishness, as we shall see in the next section. But that behavior does not make the facts go away. In like manner, focusing on the good things to the exclusion of acknowledging the bad things also does not make the bad things go away. It is simply true that people are the same all over the earth for the past several thousand years. Nothing significant has changed except people's knowledge about physical things and how matter and energy work, and they're applying it to solve physical problems. Thus, the improvements in science and technology. Human beings and the problems caused by our nature has not changed one bit, as the above facts illustrate. Religion has not solved those problems over the recent millennia, and in fact has caused much conflict. That is not to say that some people have not been good people or that they have not made significant contributions to smaller groups of people. Some recent examples come to mind, like Gandhi in India and Martin Luther King Jr. in the US and Nelson Mandela in South Africa and others. They all made significant improvements within a nation, culture, or group of people on the earth. The problem is, when those leaders die, what happens? Do the things they stood for and the ethics or principles they believed or implemented remain and endure among their people or beyond? Sadly, history provides the answer to that question. Look at India, the US, and South Africa today. India has billionaires and remains deeply divided along religious and economic status. The US is falling apart with identity politics, meaning racial, ethnic, gender, and religious division is growing along with a deepening income wealth divide. South Africa's racial advancements under Mandela are rapidly deteriorating. The big picture is what is in view here, and given the facts above, we are failing badly given the potential we have. If you consider the potential, all human beings working together for good, constructive purposes and projects without conflict, the failure is magnified tremendously. The simple fact is that people have the ability to work together without conflict, but rather choose not to. This failure is worse considering the fact that more than ever in history, through technology, we are capable of alleviating much of the non-human caused suffering that plagues billions of human beings. Food abundance and distribution means have never been greater. Well drilling technology and the means to accomplish it to provide self-drinking water over the earth have never been better. Disease fighting and other medical technology and cures have never been better, etc. Furthermore, due to global communication removing the excuse of ignorance and due to the abundance of resources of some people groups and nations, we really don't have a valid excuse for the above. All we have are the root problems, which are described in the next section, which causes what we see on the earth and causes us to be guilty. If we, you and I, are not working to help improve things, if we, you and I, are not working to bring change in some way to problems we see, then we are part of the problem instead of part of the solution. What are the Christians doing to solve these problems? Is it not true that Christians manifest the problems within their own circles? And is it not true that Christians and Christianity claim to have the solutions to make the world a better place? And is it not true that organized Christianity has been around for millennia and yet the problems are not going away? Can you point to a Christian community where the truths of the Christians are consistently practiced and lived out? If you can, why are you not part of them? Here's a truth worth pondering. Few people are good, most are bad, and the strong or powerful take advantage of, use, or abuse the weak or powerless. Don't believe that? Why? Because perhaps you have the wrong standard to make that judgment. Or perhaps there is something in the way of your being able to make that judgment properly. Or perhaps you really don't want to see the facts. Or perhaps you have a strong bias against the facts. In the next chapter, we will explore the premise that we have a strong and deep bias regarding how we view ourselves and others and the state of society around us. Chapter summary. The world is a nasty place that really can only be denied by ignoring the facts or by having a very low standard to judge right from wrong. As we shall see, having some positive belief philosophy that one uses to ignore the facts presented in this chapter is both delusional and selfish. Inasmuch as Christianity claims to impact the world, it has not improved the general state of things, and in many cases, it has been the source of conflict and violence in God's name. Christians do not have widespread models of actual real communities where their supposed beliefs and practices are lived out and manifested.